Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
All right, we're back at it here in the courtroom of current events for another episode of Peter's Proffer, and today is a really fun one. It's a little bit different because we filmed it as a YouTube video that we did a YouTube live, and we're going to get some videos out of it as well, but I'm interviewing another entrepreneur in town. Kevin Schlenker is his name. He's the CEO of Scar Audio. We get into a lot of the details in the podcast. I just wanted to remind everybody, subscribe, lock in, like our podcast, 5-star reviews everywhere, anything you can do, any questions you have on social media, hit us up at Tragos Law. And there'll be a break in the middle that we'll kind of go through because we filmed two separate videos, but I wanted to combine them all into one big podcast. So hopefully you guys enjoy it, and we'll be back with you guys next time. All right, so we're here today with Kevin Schlenker, who is an entrepreneur, a Forbes 30 under 30 guy who started his own company from the ground up. On the Forbes website, it actually says education, UCF dropout, which I'm sure a lot of people love, and a lot of people aspiring to be entrepreneurs think that that's a good way to do it is drop out of college. But we're going to get into his story today and his background and how it's not as easy as it may seem to take a company doing nothing to now doing $10, $11, $12, $13 million a year. So why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about your background, your family's background, and kind of how you got into car audio speakers.
Okay, sure. So, appreciate you having me on today.
Absolutely, man.
Start there. So, you know, I get asked that question a lot. I would say there's no really specific answer about how I got into it. I just, you know, I think from a young age, I was really passionate about business and, you know, had some mentors in my life that I would bounce questions off of back and forth. You know, what should I do? This is probably going into my college years. And just taking that and really taking it to heart, you know, getting their feedback and just saying, hey, find something you love to do in business and take it from there, was a very vague, I get that it was a very vague way for them to tell me to get into business, but I took it as, you know, okay, I know what I like to do. Let me take what they said and bring it to the next level.
So do you feel like what you do with speakers is something that can be applied basically across any product or any business that somebody's looking to start?
I think the principles can, absolutely.
Okay, so let's get into some of those principles. So how did you come up with what the principles of starting a business would be, and how do you kind of implement them specifically for your business?
Okay, so I think, you know, there's no black and white course that can teach you how to be an entrepreneur,
right,
or teach you those principles.
If only there were.
Right. I think that the hardest part for every entrepreneur and for myself learning to build a business was the principles kind of align themselves and change all the time.
Okay.
And in the beginning, you know, those, you should set a mission statement, I would say. I would say, like, find out what it is you want to build in a company and let the principles kind of mold themselves around that mission statement. And then use those specific points or criteria to build the business. Now, for me in the beginning, you know, those principles were a lot different than they are today. Mm. You know, specifically, you know, leaving college my junior year and dropping out was, you know, a huge change and a huge deciding moment in my life of, okay, am I going to get all in with this business of building Scar Audio, or, you know, do I want to finish college, slow burn the business a little bit and see what happens? I'm more of an all-in guy. So I said, you know, hey, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to drop out and know that if I didn't succeed, it was because of my actions or my inability. And so, you know, dropping out of college, I would say the first thing was just being all in. That was a huge principle for me, and just mentally saying, hey, every day I wake up, I need to be into this, you know, other than the 4 to 6 hours I'm sleeping, 110% all the time.
Right. So when you say, so being all in as part of it, what, you know, tangible steps did that include? Like, what did you do that made you feel like you were all in, that may be different from some other people that want to start a business or be an entrepreneur, that they don't necessarily take steps that actually mean I'm all in, I'm going to do this big thing that's going to kind of kick off me learning how to run a business?
Okay, sure. So, you know, once I got super serious about the business, there was a couple things that, you know, you look at other businesses and you want to study. okay, how do I bring in sales? Sales was, you know, sales is, I don't care what anybody else says, in my opinion, the most important part to building a business. You don't have sales, you don't have revenue, you don't have cash flow, you're not building a business.
You could have the best speaker in the world. If nobody's buying it, it doesn't matter, right?
Right, right. Right. So, you know, getting sales was a huge one, and still is, obviously, always your main concern. The others were, tangible things were finding a location.
Talk about going to China.
And
actually, look, I mean, that's something we talked about before. And you're talking about you went to China for 3 weeks as, what, a 20-year-old kid?
Yep.
I mean, that's something that I don't know a lot of guys, no matter how bad they want to start a business, can actually do, figure out a way to do, plan that trip, and actually make that trip a success, as opposed to just ending up touring China and eating the food and just, you know, viewing how beautiful it is, how cool it is, how different it is, learning about China. How did you actually turn that into a successful business trip that kind of launched at least a plan of what you could do as a guy from his dorm room, you know, cliche entrepreneur?
Yeah.
How could you turn that into a reality? How did that trip kind of spur you forward?
Okay, so I guess at the point that I decided to jump all in, the first step was to go to China and say, hey, I'm making speakers. I want to build a speaker business. Where do I get these made? So that would be a tangible point. It's like, figure out where you're going to source your products from,
right?
And get there, you know? So for me, it was hopping on a plane to China and spending as much time as needed. You know, I bought a one-way ticket. It happened to be 3 weeks. I could have been there for a day and maybe it would have worked out, but I felt it was super important to go visit China. You know, I knew nothing about manufacturing, knew nothing about international trade. And so spending those 3 weeks there was huge in terms of just seeing how things are built. You know, not a lot of manufacturing is done in America anymore. And, you know, being able to see that first person just opened my eyes to so many other things that kind of fell into place about running a business.
I think made in China is such a misnomer and people don't understand what
100%.
That actually means. Like people 100%. Don't, you could see, you know, some of the best products, some of the highest quality products even are made in China. I'm not saying that, you know, everything has to be made in China. If there's any problem making it in the USA, that's great if you can. But I do think that something like you, when you go over there, you learn so much more about what it actually entails for something to be manufactured in China that you're going to sell, and you can still control the quality.
Absolutely.
I mean, when we talk about, you know, principles of a business, I can just tell from touring your facility and, you know, talking to some of your employees and seeing how the business runs, that one of your principles is also, you know, the customer comes first. So when you're dealing with, like you said, quality and getting sales, something that I think people miss is after the sale occurs, keeping that person happy. They're going to buy more product, dealing with the problems that they have, dealing with the issues they have. Why don't you talk about the principle that you guys obviously have here about, you know, quality customer service that you have for your customers?
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, in stemming from that trip from China and why it took me 3 weeks is I had to find manufacturers that I felt comfortable with that always put me first as their customer. And if you facilitate that into every part of the business, whether it be me and the manufacturers I'm dealing with from the business point of view or the customers that we take care of as a business every day, those same principles and how you treat and are treated are the most important thing in business, because they will garner you sales. They will allow you to grow the business. I mean, you know, how often is it that you hear of a positive referral from somebody, you know, in a product they bought and building a brand, and then that person going and purchasing your product? I mean, one just flows into the other. So, you know, principles as far as taking care of your customers and just putting it into every part of what you do every day in a business is the most important thing.
Right. So, and one of the things I think is coolest about you personally is how you've built this business in a way that I'm confident you would have been successful no matter what your business was, whether it be speakers or widgets or whatever. So when we talk about these principles that we've already hit on and some more that we're going to hit on, they just go so far across the board for every business, even law. Like, we want to keep our clients happy. We want to do a good job bringing in clients. That's the hardest thing. You could be the best lawyer in the world. If you don't have clients, you're not going to be able to help anybody. So when we're dealing with these principles that can be across the board, and something that I've learned a lot about after law school, something they don't teach you in law school, and that is, I think, near and dear to your heart, the tech and the media and that side of the business that, again, in this day and age is across every business. How did you kind of implement that, and how did you use that to really make your business what it is today?
Okay, so in regards to that, I think the landscape is always changing. I think that's one of the important things to realize no matter what business you're in. Obviously, Peter being an attorney and myself selling speakers, you know, it doesn't matter what business you're in. It's always adapting to the landscape of the business that you're in. So, not that any other business might be doing something wrong. I think a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs that I talk to that might be trying to start a business are always looking at what other companies are doing wrong. I try and look at it as, what can I do better or right? What can I improve on in the business world for my niche that people aren't, you know, over excelling at? So I'm sure you have your own individual instances and things you build your practice around.
Sure.
Just like I do with Scar, that you try and excel in and just crush. And I think that's, if I was going to give advice to an entrepreneur, is not to focus on all of the wrong, because that just drags you down anyway. I mean, there are bad things that come with thinking about negative things.
Absolutely.
You think about good things and how you can just improve on a landscape you want to be completely immersed in, and you're going to have success, in my opinion.
So what do you, and another thing that we talked about, kind of touring your facility and going through some of your products, and you were pointing some things out. I know another principle you have that's really important to you is mentorship. And you can talk about some of your mentors, but also when you're talking about looking at what other companies do wrong, you've also learned a lot about what other companies do right, and you implement that into your business. So not just, you know, looking at, okay, I'm going to be better than this person for that reason. You say, they do a really good job at this, I'm going to implement that in my business going forward, whether it's packaging or sales or the way you deal with your employees or whatever it is, always learning from other companies.
Sure.
And other mentors.
Mentors is a huge one. I still read articles all the time that just insist on how successful adding a mentor in your life can be, and how much better it can make you. And every time I read an article like that, it makes me think about, you know, I've had two significant mentors in my life, and I'll share them with you both. One is, you know, the late Elliot Rubinson, super successful musician, super successful business entrepreneur in the music world, guitars, you know, retail. And then also my step-uncle, Mark Lurie, who is an internet entrepreneur. And I think both of those guys really helped mold my life. You know, both came into my life around a similar time. And just kind of like welcoming you and showing you, it wasn't that they did any particular thing. They ran their businesses. They just allowed me to be in their lives. And when I had questions, however minute those questions were, to answer them. It's like, you know, you get a passion from talking to two people like that. As I'm sure some people do, getting talking to myself or you about your business, it's like you need people to bounce those questions off of. Sure. When you know nothing. You know, I knew nothing about business, knew nothing about life. I mean, I was very young at this point. So to be able to just have somebody like that, and then it turns into a mentorship. At first, it's just like, you know, you see somebody successful and you want to be like them, so you start asking questions. And then I feel like reciprocally, they feel that passion from you, and they feel like you want to go somewhere, so they entertain your questions, and then it just turns into more of a mentor and student relationship.
One of the huge misnomers with mentorship too is people think that a mentor is going to give you your business.
No,
or give you this $1 million idea. It's like, this is the one thing I've been thinking about that's missing from the market that you can do now. And it's not like that. Really, a mentor is somebody that you can model your business or life after, right? That's an important thing, is they have to be an example of what you want to be. And then also that they're just willing to talk to you, like you're saying, which I can tell also just from, again, our time here today at Scar Audio, that you'd be willing to do for somebody else. And it's, I think exactly, you hit it on the head where you said, when somebody shows the initiative and the go for it type of mentality that you have as a young entrepreneur, that gets you even more excited and more willing to be their mentor and more invested in their life. And again, it doesn't have to be, you know, they have the perfect product or anything like that, but it's just being a mentor to somebody is really just helping them navigate the waters.
Right.
And when we talk about navigating the waters, something that's true for every entrepreneur that's successful that I know personally is there are some hard times. It's not always, you know, you build Scar Audio and now you're doing $15 million a year. Talk about some of the hard steps that went through, some of the things you learned the hard way being a young entrepreneur starting something from absolute scratch.
Oh, geez. That list could go quite long, and it's never ending. You know, certain things get easier along the way, but the trials and tribulations that you go through building a business are unlike any other, and that's what molds you as a business owner and a founder. You know, if you don't have those experiences, and every entrepreneur will tell you the same thing, if you don't fail, you won't succeed. You know, there's been so many, some minor instances, some much more stressful in building a business, such as, you know, to go into more detailed instances, you know, raising capital for every entrepreneur. And I'm sure a lot of people, you know, maybe watching this would love to know how you go about doing that. I had no idea in the beginning, you know. I think there's a little bit of luck in business, but for the most part, it's your own destiny, you know. And it starts with an idea and raising capital. You know, if you don't have an idea, you don't have a business. And if you don't have capital, it's hard to build a business.
Sure.
So for me, the struggle was, hey, I'm recently dropped out of college with no pedigree or track record.
Right.
I've already proven that I can drop out of something.
Yeah, it's true. So, I think about that. It's true.
So, you know, I already have to sell myself on why I dropped out of this to the person I want to invest in me. And then also I have to sell them on the idea. So that was a huge problem in the beginning, is not having a track record, but also trying to raise money.
Sure.
You know, so that was one. Another one was, I guess, hiring.
Yeah.
Hiring was a huge one for me. Mm-hmm. And just...
how many employees, hiring the right person, what are you
so
actually
many,
gonna,
yeah,
what
so
are you
going
to take off your plate to give them to do? You know, like, what are you going to trust them to handle that you're not currently handling?
And you just brought another one up to me, is micromanagement. I mean, micromanagement for me, and I'm sure a lot of other people experience this, taking a step back from your baby, you know, and trusting the people that you hire. And I've gotten a lot better at that, you know, as the years have gone on. But in the beginning,
but nobody teaches you that.
No
in the
one
beginning.
And they won't. And no one can ever tell you to stop micromanaging, because you will for X amount of time, whether it's months, years, weeks, until you adapt. And honestly, I'll tell you, you know, looking at other businesses that have never grown, it's or ones that since I've started and companies have scaled much faster, and, you know, whether it's technology and just seeing Facebook from when I had started Scar, yes, Facebook was out for many years already. But the explosive growth they've gone through as, you know, a multi-hundred million dollar company to now a multi-billion dollar company, hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right.
And just seeing, like, the culture that's created, and, like, taking a step back and just realizing that people are super important, and that if you're going to hire good people, trust them in your business.
Right.
Or there's no point in having them.
So here's where we broke for a quick second, and we're going to come back and kind of dive into some more of the specifics about building capital, about what it means to scale a business, what he did specifically to go all in. We get in a little bit more detail in the second video. There's some repetition, but I think you're going to learn a lot more over this next section of the podcast, and we're going to probably do a multi-part video series that dives into more of these business aspects for young entrepreneurs. So if you have any feedback as a listener, find us, send us emails, send us comments, messages, whatever we can do, and we'd love to get some entrepreneurs together and do a roundtable or a panel on how they handled those questions that you may have. So let's jump into the second part now.
All right, so we're here with the CEO of Scar Audio, Kevin Schlenker. My name's Peter Tragos. I'm a lawyer in Clearwater, Florida, personal injury, criminal defense firm. I have a podcast. I came here to tour Scar Audio's facility and interview Kevin because we, in our podcast, are trying to get the perspective of all different kinds of entrepreneurs. And I've known Kevin for a while. We actually met through one of his mentors that he mentioned earlier in the interview that we'll probably circle back and talk about again, Elliot Rubinson. And we've known each other for a long time. I've known him since he was a high school kid. Always seemed like a guy that was going to be successful. I didn't know what, or with what I should say. And it just so happens that it happened with a car audio company, building speakers, selling them. And we're talking about the principles that he applies to his business that I personally think, even in my field as the legal business, which is very special, specific field, you can apply it to that and any other entrepreneur. He's a young guy. What are you, 26 years old?
27.
27 years old, young guy doing multi-million dollars a year on Forbes 30 under 30 list, on everything you could be on. But in reality, he's a guy that is an entrepreneur with a lot for all of us to learn from. And we're going to jump into some more of the principles that we've already been talking about. So when we talk about principles of building a business, we've already talked about, you know, customer service, making sure your customers are happy, being all in, which really means taking steps that other people aren't willing to step, dropping out of college, which is not necessarily something I would advise everybody to do. But, and he already talked about, you know,
I wouldn't as well, just for the record,
overcoming that, because you drop out of college. And when you're trying to build capital, which I'd like to get in more specifically, when you're trying to build capital, that's something you've got to overcome. Like, I went to college and I dropped out of college, but I want you to give me a bunch of money to start a company.
Right.
And they're thinking, well, how do I know you're not going to quit on this company?
Right.
So why don't you explain how you actually tried to build some of that capital and what worked and what didn't work through that process?
Sure, sure. And thanks again for having me on today, Peter.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a wealth of information out there, and I'm always trying to learn. So, you know, I feel like doing this podcast with you and being able to sit down and just share that information from what I've learned up to this point and so many years to come. Like you said, meeting through Elliot, somebody super successful, you know, in the music business, similar to mine. I manufacture and distribute and sell speakers. You know, he did that with musical instruments. Got to learn a lot from him, and just being able to kind of share that with the world and always be learning and bouncing ideas off you as an attorney and just completely different area of business, but a business owner. You know, at the end of the day, you're still a business owner. And so I'll get to your question here in a second, but just always learning from other people is super valuable. So
and he's always been willing to be a mentor for other people as well. Older or
younger.
I love
talking business, yes.
And there's a lot of people probably older than you that could learn a lot from you that are starting their own business or coming out of a field that they don't want to work in anymore and learning how to start a business. And he's a wealth of information because he's been doing it for so long, even
And from
though,
some of those older people, you know, learning the slower, methodical way to do business is super valuable as well, you know, because I am an all-in 24/7, you know, as a lot of other young entrepreneurs probably are, just hustle and bustle kind of guy.
Right.
But taking a step back and looking at the grand picture sometimes is, I think, one of the most valuable things I've learned from older entrepreneurs. So sure. It goes both ways, 100%.
Absolutely.
But as far as the capital thing goes, you know, capital for, you know, an entrepreneur starting a business is the hardest part, hands down. All the other things that come usually after you've raised capital, employees, you know, other topics we've already touched on briefly. But raising capital, I didn't raise a lot of capital in the beginning, to be honest with you. I had a very close family friend by the name of Mr. Racklin, huge credit, still a huge backer in my business. Just a family friend, an angel loan. You know, it was a $7,000 loan. I don't know if I put that on the record before. Bought the first 100 subwoofers that Scar Audio ever made. And the rest is history from there. You know, that loan, I had to do some persuading with him, you know, to get that money.
Sure.
And
it doesn't sound like a lot now,
sell quick.
But back then, it's a ton of money to
I was
ask
in college
for.
Still,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, that's a ton of money to ask somebody for.
Today,
think about it
right,
now. If somebody's
yeah.
asking you to write a $7,000 check and they've never done anything before, that's
I don't
not
even know if I
could
personally
do.
Write the check myself.
Right. I mean, that's a tough thing to do is really put your trust in somebody. So how did you sell him on it? What it wasn't just because of, hey, I'm Kevin, please give me some money. Did you have to come up with some pro forma or give him an idea of what you were going to build with the business? What
that's
did you bring
question.
To the table?
I couldn't even tell you.
Did you go to China before?
No. So I was actually going to China shortly after that. But
did you have that plan?
I didn't even have that plan
okay.
yet. That's how crazy
So he just
it was.
Had some trust.
He believed
in
me. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So I knew you as a high school kid. He knew you.
And you knew me prior to this conversation
right.
with him.
Right. So then maybe he just kind of saw something and was willing to take a bet on it.
I hope so.
Okay. All right. So
he
so
took
once,
a bet on me. Absolutely.
And once you built that, how did you come back to the table and build more capital?
Okay. That's so... The $7,000 was a belief in me, and then taking that belief and then not going right back to him for more capital.
Right.
And I think that would also be my advice to anybody is if you get a little bit of angel funding, angel loans, you know, money from family, that's what, you know, typically an angel debt is, run with it. Don't go right back to that person and ask for more money. I think a lot of people have trouble raising money because they often either oversell or try and raise too much without proving themselves. So I took the $7,000, sold 100 speakers. I bought more speakers, obviously, kept selling those speakers, but I did it on personal credit cards. I used student college debt at the time. You know, I used student loans to build a business. I really
right.
did. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of complication around it. I mean, it's personal credit cards, student loans, and this initial $7,000.
Because you're
check.
Taking the bet on yourself at that point.
Correct.
This guy's giving you $7,000, you know, that he's taking a bet on you. It probably shows something too that you're willing to bet it on yourself with this credit card debt, the student loan debt, because that's going to come back on you.
Correct.
So you basically made an investment in yourself as well.
Right. And then shortly after that, then I allowed you know, myself to start saying, okay, I need to take a step back. We're starting to sell a lot of product now. A lot of money is starting to be involved. I need to bring other people on board. And this kind of goes back to the point of I didn't go right back to Mr. Racklin. I went to other friends and family and what I would consider my seed round of capital. And typically in capital, venture capital, you'll have an angel, then you'll have an official seed round per se, then you'll go into a series A, B, C, and so on and so forth. Now for me, you know, Mr. Racklin was my seed. After that was, or my angel, then after that was the seed round. That was my grandparents, an uncle, so on and so forth.
Sure.
And that round then got a little bit larger, but that's after 2.5 years. You know, I used personal capital and a very small angel loan to get to year 2.5. And then from there, yes, then we started getting into some bigger numbers. I think I still personally think it was a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
You know, I think I had raised $150,000 at year 2.5, but we were doing $1 million a year. So,
and at that point, that's what you use to sell the capital for, is they see
correct.
Your business model. They see numbers. They see
you
what's coming in.
You have to have
in.
Sales. 100%.
Right. At that point, when you're showing them the sales, it's a lot easier to get capital. But,
oh, well,
I guess,
with
I guess
a grain of salt, right.
I should say a lot easier than when you first drop out of college and are asking people for money, which is why
because I had dropped out at this point. So that's why it almost got even harder, I would say. You're now trying to convince family and friends.
Right.
If they have some extent of money, they're also successful, and they have lived the American dream,
right.
per se. So they've either had a college.
And as shocking as it is, no matter right. how much money somebody has, they still don't like giving it away, right?
They want to believe. If you have a college degree, it's a little easier
absolutely.
To sell.
Absolutely. You know, which, you know, in today's day and age is a whole other discussion.
It is.
It's crazy. But so one of the other things, so you're building this capital. Is there anything else you want to get into about the capital building?
I think so, yeah. So, you know, once I raised a little bit, what I would consider at the time, I mean, I was 21, 22 years mm-hmm. old, having got a check, multiple checks for $50,000, getting to 150 grand. That was a lot of money to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of liquid cash in the bank, and I was fired up. And for, I think, a 3 week to, you know, a month and a half span, I was like, I've got cash in the bank, and I'm not going to be chasing my tail. And a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm sure watching this, can relate to being very tight. Right. All the time. And, you know, for that month and a half, I felt as soon as I started using that capital to build a business, I was back in the rut of this is going awesome, but I need more capital.
Right.
And again, I didn't go raise it right away, but you start to realize, okay, if I can prove my sales and I can prove that I'm cash flow positive and that I'm running lean and focused on the business and not wasting money, you know, I love when I hear the term tax write-offs, you know, don't spend money, you know, build a business, sell product and focus. And after I started realizing if I could keep doing that, I could raise more money, then I started going back to some of the initial seed investors and angel lenders. And the amount started getting into the $500,000 more consistently.
And I think that's interesting because anybody can spend money, right?
Anybody can
smash marketing or have 100 employees or whatever, have a bigger facility that you don't need. But I think it shows a lot more to investors when you're talking about being tight, spending that dollar like it's your dollar. You know, even though somebody gave it to you or as an investment, spending every dollar the way that you think is the best use of that dollar probably helps a lot when you go back
sure.
to them and ask for more capital.
100%.
Yeah, I would think you're having to sell how you're using that money and they want to see what you're doing with it.
Right. I mean, the two biggest selling points of raising capital, in my opinion, are, and I learned a lot of this, you know, from Mark, my step-uncle that I mentioned earlier, one of the two huge mentors in my life. You know, Mark's raised hundreds of millions of dollars. But man, when I talk to him and the passion he instilled upon me and what I try and relay when I raise money is that you got to make the person believe in you because,
sure.
you know, as much as you could sell them on the idea and they could understand the idea, half the time they're not going to understand the idea. And when you leave that office, they need to remember who you are.
Yep.
And if it's not family, yes, family will because they give you the time of day for having that blood link with you. They're going to forget about you. And it's hard-earned dollars that people
are
giving
you. You're not the only person asking them for money, right?
Not,
I mean, that's what it really comes down to is just like...
And why take it out of a 401k or the market when it's earning 11 to 16% a year? You know, they're doing it because they believe in you.
Sure. And I think just like...
No matter what level you're at.
With the products that we talked about, you know, it's not necessarily you have to be the best or be better than somebody else, but you just have to make it something that they believe in and something that they want to deal with and something they want to invest in is really you. And I think part of your background with, you know, dealing with the tech and the media part of it is something that they probably see you can apply to any business. And this is the one that you've chosen to apply it to so that they probably believe it's going to be successful. And so when we talk about another one of the principles being all in, we mentioned your China trip. So why don't you tell us, how did that actually happen? You said it was a one-way ticket. How'd you pay for the ticket? What was your plan when you got there? And how did that plan kind of come into fruition?
So after you know, getting the first check and getting some seed money, I said, okay, I need to put this to work now.
Sure.
And I was not about to risk the only $7,000 I had with a factory that may never send me products. So
right.
I bought a plane ticket one way, went over there, you know, via Alibaba. Really, there was no special connection to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I had no connections over there, obviously. So I set up about 10 to 15 appointments with different speaker manufacturers in
sure.
China in the Jiushan district, which is right outside, about an hour outside of Shanghai.
Did they care about your sales or anything like that? Or was it easy to
get
meetings with
them? They knew I was new.
Okay.
You know, it was, when you're also dealing with manufacturers in China, you're going to have a lot of low level manufacturers,
sure.
a lot of small business type manufacturers that are there to get by. And I'm not saying there's an issue with that, but you're not going to get the best product as you want for your business.
Okay.
You want to deal with the big players just like most businesses.
Sure.
So again, you have to sell yourself. You're not raising money this time, but you're selling yourself like, hey, I want you to give me the time of day to make, when these guys are making 50,000 speakers at a time every single day, 10, 20 containers of product.
They're taking a risk on you too, because if they're making your speakers, they're not making somebody else's.
They're taking
a
lot of time to make 100 speakers
right,
for me.
Right, exactly, exactly.
And so out of those 15 meetings, I had one that went really well a couple weeks in, and that's finally when I felt comfortable enough to come back to the US, and the rest was done. I mean, I did go back to, and I have been back to China many times since then. But a lot of it's done now via communication because we have great trust in each other, and that's been now a 7-8 year relationship.
Why did you think it was important to actually go there and not just handle the whole thing remotely?
Oh, getting burned initially, you know, for capital reasons. I knew there wasn't going to be more money coming in if I lost the first chunk without care. So I treated it like my own and went over there. I really think that's the main reason.
Okay. And is that something somebody told you to do, or did you come up with that on your own, or how did you know that you were going to get, or that the burning potential was there in China, and then how did you actually take the step to do it?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like just with my personality, I wanted to go see it. I wanted to see how factories work. I thought it was fascinating. Every time I see a picture online, you know, growing up, I'm like, that is so cool, seeing things be made. Whether I was watching the History Channel and the Men Who Built America, or the Discovery Channel and the different shows about business on there, just seeing things getting made, I always thought was fascinating. So that was, you know, along with not losing the capital, a huge driver of pushing me to actually physically fly there.
Sure. So when we talk about...
And highly recommend it for any American to see the manufacturing process in China. Highly recommend the experience.
Right. And again, we've talked about how the made in China thing can be a misnomer. So you should go there and actually see what it's like and see what the whole business aspect of it is like. And I always feel like meeting somebody you're going to work with does a lot when you're starting to deal with problems or when you're starting to deal with issues that you have. You have somebody you can call that you've actually met that knows who you are, and you know who they are, and you know you're real people, especially in today's day and age. So,
and it's a great relationship. I mean, China, a lot of people have a misconception about China, and I don't know if it's the political news recently with all the tariffs, or, you know, it's just the way Americans think now, but there is great, I mean, look at the iPhone and Apple, one of the most valuable companies in the world, makes a product that nearly half the population in the US uses, and it's a fantastic product that is manufactured in China. Yes, it is designed here, but there is great relationships in China. You know, it is a global economy that we live in. So to not take advantage of what people might say is high quality. Yes, there are high quality products made in China. There's no problem with China.
And every entrepreneur and business owner has to make that decision on their own. But I think
you're naive if you're not open-minded.
I agree.
You know?
And I think that's something that's really been missed today in starting your business is, the political climate may push you in a direction that's not right for your business.
100%.
So at least going out there, and even if you were to come back and said, I'm going to manufacture in the US, at least you know.
Yes.
You know, you've taken that step, you've crossed that option off, whatever it is. I think that's really good advice to actually take the leap to go all in a way that I'm going to fly across the world to see what it's like over there and to see if that works for my business. So what would you say are some of the keys that make SCAR Audio different from other speaker companies?
Oh, geez.
The highlights, you know.
The highlights. I mean, there's a couple of topics that we like to focus around here, and our mission statement is always about the customer. You know, just always focusing on the customer and then translating that into the parts of the business. So actually, from a business point of view, some of the things we like to focus on are customer service. That's huge. Just, you know, in the world of Amazon and people wanting instant gratification, I say to my guys, you know, every time we have a meeting, we got to give them instant gratification.
Sure.
And they are always right. And if we start there and work our way backwards, knowing they're always right, how can we take care of them? Like, what, whether it's returns and shipping and just like transit times outbound, you know, call wait times, email response times, the different channel response times. You know, if you start at the forefront of let's treat the customer the best we can and they're always right, and then all of those things I just mentioned and stem backwards, you're going to hit every little finite detail you need to make sure that you're treating them perfectly.
Sure, and I think
that's
that,
just one.
I think that the customer's always right is easy to say, and it's been said for a long time. But with today's day and age, that's a lot harder than it used to be.
And honestly, I know my customers are watching this. They may not always be right, but that doesn't matter.
Right,
in my
I guess
opinion,
the customer's always right is probably not the right comment. The point is, the customer should feel valued.
Yes,
that's the point. Like 100%. If they can be wrong, everybody's wrong once in a while, but they should be valued even if they're wrong or asking for something you can't do. Being respectful goes a long way. Or like you said, I mean, we toured this facility. We went through where you fix some of the warranty stuff, or people send back a something blue within the 2 years or whatever it was. You know, like you said, I don't know everything about your business, but you're saying we just fix it and we fix it. Or we send them a brand new one, and you know, we deal with them in a way that we would want to be dealt with, right? When you buy a product, you expect it to work. If it doesn't work and it's within the warranty, you fix it, no questions asked, or you know, send a new one back out to them. And I think that goes a long way with any business. I know, you know, my wife and I shop places that it's easier to return stuff.
Right.
Because if it's not working, you got to return it.
You're building a brand. You know, when you're building a brand, you're
absolutely
building a reputation.
And what do you want people to associate with that brand, right? What do you want them to associate with that brand? And customer service, I think, is one of the best ways to go, because especially in a company where, you know, like ours is the legal field or yours speakers, there's lots of them. There's lots of lawyers, especially in Florida. There's lots of speakers around the country
and
the world.
But how do you stand out, right? And you do stand out.
Exactly.
I mean, you're part of a very reputable firm because you stand out.
And I think it's important to step back and look at your business in a way as an entrepreneur of how am I going to stick out? You know, it's always easy to, I shouldn't say easy, everybody's go-to is I want to invent this product that doesn't exist, that's a gap in the market that everybody's going to want to buy. But that's not always as easy as it sounds. And coming up with a company and doing it a better way than other companies do it usually can start with customer satisfaction.
Sure.
So what other principles do you guys try to institute?
You know, just the last thing I want to touch on there is I think it takes 10 years to build a reputation and only 60 seconds to lose it.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so
if that.
That's our motto here.
Yeah.
You know, the other principles from a business point of view are ironically, a lot of them, you know, fall back on customer service in some way, whether it's shipping times. But I try to, you know, with our business, and I think where we're really excelling with SCAR is, you know, first the products, you know, and manufacturing the highest quality, best sounding as far as speakers go, or best performance with amplifiers, et cetera, the best product possible.
Sure.
Once you have a solid product, yes, you can expand the line over the years. Then you have to look at your processes as a business. What can we do better than these other manufacturers? Because there are so many of our competitors, and I'm not going to get into names, but, you know, different business models. You know, they're in distribution models. The landscape is changing. We've talked about that. You know, it's going online. Everything's online. You go to Amazon, you want great customer service. Returns are easy. How can I bring those things to my customer and do it better than all of my competitors for my particular niche? So, you know, that is a huge principle for us, is just doing things better.
And not getting comfortable in the way that you do
not
it.
Getting comfortable.
That's working, right? I mean, because you've been successful over the years. You're growing every year. It would be easy to get comfortable in how you're doing things, but instead you step back and say, how can I do it better? Meaning, don't get stuck in the way that I'm doing it now, because as things change, which you've talked about a lot, everything's always ever-changing, you know, be ready to change and be willing to change, because change is hard, especially when you're successful. It's hard to tell somebody to do something different, but it seems like that's a principle of SCAR, is you're willing to change no matter what if it's going to make your company better.
Right. I mean, I'll constantly, you know, a good example is I'll be out in the warehouse with my guys packing orders, you know, and I do that and I learned this quality from Mark with, you know, listening on phone calls for customer support. You know, he used to do it in his days of diapers.com. And I took that to heart. You know, he was in his car making a phone call to a customer that left a negative review on the site. And that stuck. I mean, I think I was probably 12 years old at the time. But the fact that, you know, I saw how big his business was at a young age and how many employees he had. And then on the drive home, you know, taking his time to call this one customer over maybe a diaper review.
Yeah.
I was like, that's silly.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, it's like going back to what I was talking about, packing orders in the warehouse with my guys or listening in on phone calls. It's being hands-on, being nimble enough and lean enough to experience so you can change like that.
Sure.
You know, whether it's using different shipping carriers or packaging products differently, which is one thing we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
We've been able to really excel in product categories of car stereo specifically because we've adapted and just being, for instance, hands-on in the warehouse, seeing where things get broken. You know, if you're ordering a 120-pound speaker box, you don't want it arriving damaged.
So, and that's really important. So for entrepreneurs that are starting a company, you don't think about all, like if you're, we'll use yours for an example, you're thinking about a car speaker, you're thinking about performance, you're thinking about the way that it looks, you're thinking about making it cool, you're thinking about something that people want, but something that can make you better than other companies is something as simple as packaging and shipping.
Yep.
You know, and that's, if you don't go through the whole process, if you're not in the warehouse seeing the guys do it, if you're not listening to the customer complaints or any phone call that you guys have, we record ours and can listen back to how people deal with clients and what went wrong. If
I'm going to write that down.
You record things, and of course you have to tell them you're recording But I'm
another
just saying,
conversation.
Like, it can really help, you know, dealing with the clients that, you know, maybe weren't, somebody wasn't as nice to them at the office, or coaching your employees and things like that. But you have to know your process of your business from beginning to end. And like you said, you're a tech guy, you're kind of a CEO type of guy that likes to be at the top dealing with everything. But you need to go down to every level, even if it's something that's not your expertise, like picking up a box or taping a box or whatever, dealing with the orders, and become an expert at it so that you can help your employees be better at what they do.
Right.
So that's a really important thing for an entrepreneur, that, you know,
never
you learn along the
good,
way.
Never be too good, quote unquote, for to sure. get involved, because it really, that's one of the things that irks me, is when you talk to CEOs or business owners that are like too high and mighty
sure.
to get down in the dirt. It's never dirt. It's your company. It's your baby. It's always going to be your baby. And when you stop caring, that's when you lose. That's when you lose market share. And that's when you go out of business.
Yeah. I mean, I stapled papers and hole punch papers and put them in binders for my dad, you know, at our office, doing every part of it so that you understand what somebody's going through. And when they say, I can't do that.
Like, or you have a paralegal that's doing it wrong, you can catch
them
doing it wrong.
And I'm like,
wrong, right?
I know you can do it because I did it and I know how to do it. I'm not saying it's easy, but I know how to do it and you can do it this way. And I think that's really important, like how you're talking about too, is filling the orders and being lean with people that you can trust in the warehouse that are doing it the right way. And
right,
if they're not,
right.
you can have a conversation with them about it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that's really important. So any other principles or thoughts that you think that make Scar Audio kind of stick out as a better speaker company that we can kind of end on now?
Not per se principles. I know I got a little off topic with talking about customer service and,
sure.
and maybe some people want to hear more about the business side of things and scaling a business quickly and the
sure.
numbers, you know, some of the big, more exciting numbers that we haven't, you know, been able to dive into yet.
Sure. Explain to us how you scale the business. Because, I mean, you know, that's something that scaling a business is different depending on what business type that you're in. So when you're talking about selling widgets, basically, which is what you do, which can go across the whole landscape of sales, how do you scale something like that? And what's scaling too fast versus too slow? How do you deal with stuff like that?
Okay, right. So I hit a bottleneck in about year four. Once we started getting a track record as a very minor brand in the space, we were doing about $3 million, $3.5 million in sales. My processes, and this is also a very huge piece of advice for anybody building a business, is having good processes in place.
Sure.
I didn't have any at that point in time. And when I started feeling like we got some traction and we started getting larger purchase orders and more volume going through the doors, it became a huge issue when I couldn't get them out. And, you know, and I didn't have enough employees. And then when you go to start hiring and you don't have processes, well, what do you teach your employees?
Yeah.
You know, so we figured that out quickly. But again, as an entrepreneur, you're going to be spending 20 hours a day. Don't ever think you're not going to be. But that's part of the love. You know, you love doing that. You're all hands on. You know, you'll get the orders out. And then on the weekends, you'll go in and make better processes when mm-hmm. things quiet down. You know, that's how I was able to scale from doing 3.5 million 4 years ago to now 12 million last year, hopefully 20 to 25 million this year and beyond. You know, I have guys come in with me on the weekends. You have to have good people as
sure.
well. It's not just about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to them. But
talk about all the things that go into that. So when you go from 2 million to 12 million or 12 million to 25 million, what changes specifically, like in your day to day? Like, you're showing me your warehouse space now. What did it used to look like and what's it going to look like 5 years
okay.
from now?
So in Orlando, the year I dropped out of college, I got a little 1,200 square foot warehouse downtown.
Probably wasn't little when you got it, right? You were like,
no,
all
I was
this
excited,
space.
Man.
You're
I had
like,
an
how
office.
Am I ever going to fill this space?
I had a mailing address and a phone number.
That's awesome.
That wasn't a self-forwarded number,
yeah.
so it was exciting.
Right.
But yeah, so we did that for a 16-month stretch, and then I decided that it was time to. I'd already dropped out at this point. I was all in.
Right.
That warehouse got full pretty quick. You know, just trying to move as much product as possible, filled up and. Yeah, I didn't have any connection to Orlando, so 1,200 square feet, spent the time there, moved out, you know, came back to Tampa where I'm from. I was over in a part of town called Brandon and got a 5,500.
Brandon, where Amazon is.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
A little town called Brandon
right
where
outside
Amazon
Ybor,
now is.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we got a 5,500 square foot warehouse there, which was, that was kind of like more of, I almost think more of an eye-opener because I had a storage unit before the
right.
first space. So 5,500 square feet was a lot, and the lease that came with it and the price point also was a lot.
Right,
you know, I'm still
exactly.
very young at this point, still young today. I've gotten more successful to dealing with those numbers though.
Right.
But anyway, the 5,500 square foot warehouse was a 2.5 year lease, mm-hmm. that carried us up to about $3 million in sales. Had to move on, obviously, to a larger building. I mean, not everybody will, you know, depending on what business you're in or how fast you want to grow or what point you become comfortable in life. Like for me, I'm all business. I love business. I never want to stop growing. And my plan with Scar is to build it into a multi-$100 million company. If that's not your goal, that's also fine. But with me and after that,
a lot of people can be really profitable with smaller companies.
Absolutely.
You know, making $2 million a year, sometimes you can make more money than somebody that has a $100 million a year company.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, if you're running a $100 million company and losing money, or
exactly.
you're running a
$1 million
company,
and a lot of them do. I mean, how many companies go under that were a $100 million company the year before?
Right.
You know, so that's the point, is being smart and knowing kind of when that jump is, which mentors can help a lot with.
Right.
Am I jumping too fast? Am I jumping too slow? Am I smashing in this space and actually losing money because I don't want to pay more for rent in a bigger facility? So you kind of make those decisions as you go. What are you in now?
And those are, I mean, those were, so we're in 17,000, a little over 17,000 right. square feet now. Those were gradual steps for me. I didn't want to lose a lot of money in the beginning. I was using other people's money, close family and friends.
Sure.
Nobody ever wants to lose money, so that's not where I'm going with this. But I took gradual steps to make sure that cash flow was good,
right.
make sure that we were, you know, profitable, no matter how small that was at the mm-hmm. time. But moving on after that building, I knew that I was ready to accelerate.
Okay.
You know, we had 2 years where there was, you know, very minimal profits after that, moving into our larger facility. All that was expected. It wasn't a bad thing.
I think, building at that point.
But you also have to get comfortable. It took me 4 or 5 years to say, hey, I have a brand now. I have a business. What they say about making it past year five in business is so important. I mean, I think if, you know, that stress you feel getting past year five, things starting to brighten up a little bit.
Right.
You know, but it is very hard in the beginning. And so I read all of that. I constantly am on Business Insider and those other online places and trying to learn and, you know, just digesting that. If I can make it past year five and not blow through a lot of money, then I could start accelerating. And that's
right.
kind of where we're at now, going back to your question of what we're in now. So we're in 17,500 square feet now here in Tampa. Been here for a little, almost 5 years exactly,
right.
actually. And now the brand is starting to take that accelerated growth. You know, it wasn't the first year we moved in here, but, you know, doing $12.5 million in sales last year. Conservatively, I'm not going to go into too many numbers here, but I would like to say that when we move out of here in a couple months' time, that we're going to be going to 40,000 to 80,000 square feet. Shortly after that, we'll be opening a West Coast
warehouse. Because now the warehouse is packed.
Yes,
I mean, it's packed in there. We walk through it, and you're saying it's even a downtime because stuff's flying off the shelf right now.
Right, super busy, not down, but we're down on inventory.
Right, exactly.
Keep in stock.
As packed as the warehouse is, I can't believe that that's down on inventory. But so you're saying you're basically growing out of this space now, and you're going to triple or quadruple or, you know, quintuple the space that you're in
right.
now.
Right, and then open a West Coast warehouse.
Right, okay.
And raise more money. I mean, it's,
yeah.
And that's where it gets fun for me is, you know, seeing some of the people I've been able to learn from.
Right.
Of course, everybody loves big numbers, right? And so
sure.
now that I feel like I can do it stably and, like I said, open a second warehouse on the other side of the country, know the demand is that, like, that's exciting that people want the product that badly that I am fortunate enough to be able to provide that experience
it's
and
awesome.
Service
it's
for
just,
them.
It's something to be proud of. You know, it's
Thank
definitely
you.
Not something to apologize about. It's something to be proud of. And
American dream's alive, put it that way.
And then that's the point is I think that going through these, I won't even call them growing pains, but these growth spurts is something that other people are going to ask you about and are going to learn about coming to you for advice on being an entrepreneur and scaling a business like this, because not a lot of people know how to do it. Right. I mean, and
that goes back to the mentorship though. I
yes,
mean, I would not
exactly.
be where I am without Elliot.
It's really important.
I mean, being able to learn from somebody that has raised hundreds of millions of dollars is not somebody everybody gets to do. And I mean, I do take a lot of respect and, I have a lot of admiration for him spending the time to teach me that, because I would not be able to get past, say, maybe on my own inhibitions or experience, I could grow a scar to 10 million, let's say.
Sure.
That might be my cap. Without that mentorship, I would not think about building a $100 million company.
Right.
You know.
That it's even possible.
Exactly.
Right. Well, dude, I really appreciate this. That was awesome, man.
Yeah, man.
It was
appreciate
fun.
You.
Yeah, we'll do
Thank
it again.
You, definitely.
All right.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes & Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at TragosLaw.com.